Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. Joining us right now, I have had the pleasure of knowing this individual. I respect him. I admire him. He is the president, Federation for American Immigration Reform. I would argue he has been on the forefront of this issue more than anyone else, and it is our friend Dan Stein. Dan, so great to talk to you, and boy, I'd love to hear your thoughts on where we are right now with this pending House impeachment.
Well, I'm glad to be with you. You know, this is really a major constitutional crisis because, you know, our system of checks and balances generally has every power subject to an audit by another branch of government, right? So, you know, the courts are often superintending what the executive is doing and Congress checks the executive. Well, in the case of Mayorkas and immigration, we have a situation where Mayorkas has decided to essentially take upon himself the power to admit aliens without limits. And whether it's Congress setting limits or courts, considering cases or not considering cases, he's been able to operate outside the law. And the impeachment inquiry is part of this thing happening now in Texas, where Texas is saying, under the Constitution, this is a compact, we have the right to control the borders when the federal government refuses to do its job. Well, if you allow Mayorkas to simply ignore the law and let millions of people in and demand schooling, housing, places in hotels and apartments and everything else without limits and without the consent of the governed, I mean, you have a tyranny. And so the impeachment inquiry obviously is going to have trouble getting a conviction in the Senate, no doubt, but it's very important in laying out the record for how this happened and what are the abuses under the law that took place, the corruption and misgovernance that have happened, so that in 2025, God willing, with different political leadership, Congress can step in and craft legislation to make sure this never, ever happens again.
And Dan, if you could just touch on, I mean, you've covered this for a long time. How would you describe how Mayorkas has conducted himself in the office?
Well, this has been something we've been concerned about for a very long time, which is if you have an unscrupulous, corrupt executive that, again, decides to use immigration for his own benefit, for his party's benefit, for whatever ideological benefit or for the benefit of cartels as a co-conspirator with smuggling operatives and paramilitary cartels, you've got the basis for someone who needed to be removed from office. Now, President Lincoln got rid of General McClellan, right? Joe Biden has not gotten rid of Mayorkas. Mayorkas has been contemptuous to Congress. He lies repeatedly to the American people in Congress. He somehow believes that Congress doesn't have the right to superintend what's happening, to get honest answers. He constantly tells us the border is secure. He has his way of kind of looking down and his nose at you. I guess vision problem. I don't know. But whatever the reason, he looks arrogant. Yes. And he sounds arrogant. And frankly, John, I mean, how on earth can anyone serve as a cabinet secretary in any administration if the hostility from Congress is so vapid, so intense, so vicious that the relationship is non-existent? It's hard to even understand how. I mean, remember that this started under Obama. I mean, at the time, I said this is a dark and dangerous power where Obama is now asserting in his second term, not his first term. He said he didn't have this power. Second term, he said, you know, maybe I can use a pen and a phone, and using this parole power, which is supposed to be a very limited use discretionary thing for a handful of people, urgent reasons. He's turned this thing into a parallel immigration program and committing massive fraud on the American people by admitting people with phony asylum claims, knowing that they'll never get court dates years and years down the line, at the same time demanding Congress, quote, fix the system by basically giving an amnesty and essentially jamming Congress into saying, all you can do is ratify after the fact decisions I've made in paroling in millions of people. And then he's been setting up these parallel parole programs from countries without any legal authority at all, extending temporary protected status, which is, again, a limited use provision, to people from Venezuela, and then turning around and saying, but if you come after a certain date, we're going to deport you. Well, obviously, TPS then was a sham, because if you can deport people to Venezuela, then you shouldn't have granted him TPS. So he's been arrogantly abusing, misusing, and breaking the immigration laws, and then lying about it, and then all these negotiations in the Senate where Mayorkas is participating. I mean, this guy's the Jack the Ripper of border security, John. Why would you want him in the room?
Folks, again, it's Dan Stein. He is the president, Federation for American Immigration Reform. I'm letting you, the listeners, know. I'm just telling you, I've been covering this for a long time. There's no one more knowledgeable or more entertaining in his presentation than Dan Stein. Dan, while I have you, what is your take on what's going on right now with the governor of Texas, Governor Abbott, and the Biden administration?
Well, this is very interesting because, you know, under Article 4, the states have the power to repel foreign invasion. The cartels are a paramilitary operation with assault weapons and organized like a military. And they are running these massive smuggling operations. They're killing Americans directly or through fentanyl. And, you know, Abbott has petitioned the federal government for some kind of protection, and it hasn't come. So his position, which is very clear, is that the Texas has the right to set up perimeter barriers, buoys, razor wire, and deploy the Texas National Guard in service of the national interest. Well, you know, Biden administration has not only made it easier to immigrate illegally at every turn. I mean, you can't name one thing they've done to help deter it.
No.
They sue anybody who tries to help out, right? They affirmatively try to stop. So, of course, since the Biden administration went to court, they got the Supreme Court on an interim level appeal to say, yeah, you can take it, you know, during the case, you can take the razor wire out because it's a federal supremacy argument about the border security. And arguably, it is a federal power. Well, okay, so then the question was, are you going to actually come and take it, right? It's one thing to win the court case, another thing to actually do it in an election year, when in all 50 states, immigration is an outcome-determining political issue in this campaign. And if any, although Biden has more vulnerabilities, frankly, than a Lusitania, I mean, he's politically, on immigration, he's like between the wind and water and getting hit all the time. So the optics of the federal government coming down there and tearing down razor wire don't look so good, right? So Abbott, to his credit, called their bluff, and he basically gave the middle finger to the administration and said, you got to come and take it down. And they blinked. Biden blinked, right? Just like they always blink in the face of hostility. I mean, usually they're blinking over at overseas terrorists and foreign dictators. But this time they're blinking at a governor, and they're saying, well, if you give us access for, you know, humanitarian emergencies, we won't get in the way, right? So you see, in a sense, Abbott, as of today, at least, he's prevailing in his strategy. And you have to give this guy credit. We got some great governors. I know yours is not one of them, but we have great governors.
Yes,
you know, in some of these states, and God bless them. I mean, you know, what are you going to say? He's not running for Congress. He's not running for president.
He's,
you know,
fantastic.
He's doing the right thing.
He is.
Yeah.
For the people of Texas. Hey, Dan, you'll appreciate this. As you probably have seen, they have the illegals. They're sleeping at Logan. And I went up to, you know, get some tape and so forth. And one of the guys at Massport, who I've dealt with in the past, told me that the translator told them that all the women were told, just say you're pregnant. And they were all automatically admitted into the country. So you had women that were there that were in their 60s. They all said they were pregnant. You had, you know, young women. That just becomes, that's another part of where they manipulate the system, that the Biden administration allows that to happen.
Yeah, but this is one thing to be inept. It's another thing to intentionally sabotage the system. And then you see the hockey stick when you look at the numbers. Biden comes in, dismantles everything. But now Biden has the audacity to say to the Senate, oh, if you pass this lousy bill that actually weakens my power, I'll shut the border down now. Okay, Biden threatened to veto H.R. 2, the strong bill that the House passed, the day after they passed it last year. Okay, it wasn't even slated to come up in the Senate, and the White House already issued a veto threat. So he turns around, and now he's going, well, it's the Republicans' fault I haven't secured the border. I mean, I understand that politicians lie. I mean, I get that. But this is felony level, Super Bowl, World Series level lying by the most disingenuous. I mean, this is insane. I mean, how can he sit there and blame the Republicans for something when he's sitting there with a knife, blood dripping off the... I mean, he basically, you can track every single act that he did from the day he came into office, every executive order, every policy change, every regulation to demonstrate how he created this mass invasion. And to turn around and try to blame it on the Republicans is mind-blowing.
Yeah. Folks, again, by the way, I want to let people know, if you visit their website, I love the clock of the daily border crossings that FEAR has up. The website is FEAR, FederationImmigrationReform.us.org. Again, he is the president, Federation American Immigration Reform, the best. And it is Dan Stein. Dan, great to talk to you. I will talk to you again very soon, and keep up the great work.
Great to talk to you, my friend.
The Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Lunch, dinner, drinks in the lounge, especially this time of year. So much going on. They always have a nice crowd right there. Full bar, large dining area right there in the lounge. Easy to get to, whether it's lunch or dinner. A great meal is waiting for you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery. Think of this, since 1994. That's right, celebrating the big anniversary this year. I'll see you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Well, folks, again, the Newton teacher strike, illegal strike, continues. This is insanity. They should fire those teachers. Let's go back to 1981, August. Who's the president? President Reagan. Air traffic controllers go on strike. What was his speech?
This morning at 7 a.m., the union representing those who man America's air traffic control facilities called a strike. This was the culmination of 7 months of negotiations between the Federal Aviation Administration and the union. At one point in these negotiations, agreement was reached and signed by both sides, granting a $40 million increase in salaries and benefits. This is twice what other government employees can expect. It was granted in recognition of the difficulties inherent in the work these people perform. Now, however, the union demands are 17 times what had been agreed to, $681 million. This would impose a tax burden on their fellow citizens, which is unacceptable. I would like to thank the supervisors and controllers who are on the job today, helping to get the nation's air system operating safely. In the New York area, for example, four supervisors were scheduled to report for work, and 17 additionally volunteered. At National Airport, a traffic controller told a news person he had resigned from the union and reported to work because, quote, "How can I ask my kids to obey the law if I don't?" End quote. This is a great tribute to America. Let me make one thing plain. I respect the right of workers in the private sector to strike. Indeed, as president of my own union, I led the first strike ever called by that union. I guess I'm maybe the first one to ever hold this office who is a lifetime member of an AFL-CIO union. But we cannot compare labor-management relations in the private sector with government. Government cannot close down the assembly line. It has to provide without interruption the protective services which are government's reason for being. It was in recognition of this that the Congress passed a law forbidding strikes by government employees against the public safety. Let me read the solemn oath taken by each of these employees and the sworn affidavit when they accepted their jobs. I am not participating in any strike against the government of the United States or any agency thereof, and I will not so participate while an employee of the government of the United States or any agency thereof. It is for this reason that I must tell those who fail to report for duty this morning, they are in violation of the law. And if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they have forfeited their jobs and will be terminated.
You know, we later learned that, and Reagan held true on that promise. So later in history, we learned that world leaders were watching that, especially the Russians. And that resonated in the Soviet Union. What a difference it was between then President Reagan and Carter. Of Reagan, when he said it, he meant it. And then look what happened. They were terminated. So that he set the tone that, you know, you don't throw out something like that, right? Remember when Obama kept violating his own line in the sand? If you put that down, if you throw that down, then you have to stand by it. So let's go to some of the latest sound. This is insanity. They should fire those teachers. Let's go to WBZ television, the CBS 4. They should terminate these student teachers. Let's pick up some of the latest now.
Increasingly frustrated, a second family filed an emergency motion asking a judge to end the strike. And city leaders are putting the pressure on.
Our children are suffering because they are not in school.
And the kids are just left hanging in there waiting.
I just want the teachers and Mayor Fuller and the school committee to just agree on something for now so the kids can go back to school.
Yeah, I think it's been enough days off.
Meanwhile, right now, the union is facing a massive fine of over $500,000, and they're facing $50,000 each day that the strike continues. So
they're not going to pay it, but they don't intend to pay it. They'll then argue about it. But let's go to Channel 5. This is crazy that this is. I don't blame the parents.
He tried to find common ground. And tensions boiled over last night as some parents actually pushed to get into the union's nightly update.
I'm not fighting anybody. I'm just trying to walk in.
Some parents worry the state teachers union is now driving this strike. Newton teachers say that is not the case. The two sides bargained late into the night and made some progress, but the sides tell us they have barely talked about money and remain over $20 million apart over the life of the contract.
It's important that we get through these issues of how we work the school day and, you know, how we're going to address class size issues. All those things are really important, but at the end of the day, we've got to agree on the money too. And that's the part of the discussion that just isn't happening quick enough.
I know that what we are doing is what's best for our kids and what's best for our schools, and the budget and the finances, that's their responsibility to work out.
And about 20 parents have written letters to the judge who is overseeing this case. And coming up at 5:30, we will hear from one of the parents who is now trying to join the legal fight.
I don't know how else to explain. It's an illegal strike. This is the chair of the Newton School Committee. Breaks down 10th day of no school. Everything that they're arguing about, they have no right to be doing this during the school year. This is what the summertime is for or what have you. This is an illegal strike. I believe they should fire them. They should absolutely fire the teachers that won't report back to the classroom.
Only one kind of progress that matters right now. My kids aren't going to school again. This has gone too far. We need our kids back in school. And only the union can unilaterally make that decision.
They won't. You know, when he said it went too far, it went too far the first day that they allowed the illegal strike. So do I want to see anyone out of work? No. I don't know, and I applaud columnists that are writing about this. It's an illegal strike. It shouldn't be about fines. They should be terminated. I don't understand what part of that they don't get. And whoever would continue to put their children in that system, this is why the public school system is failing. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. All your oil needs, make it Henry Oil. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Reliable, affordable fuel oil delivery. Call Henry Oil today. Fuel oil, diesel, gasoline delivery. It's Henry Oil, residential, commercial fuel oil delivery since 1947. They also have budget plans, service contracts, lock and cap pricing. You can depend on Henry Oil. Call them today, 401-521-0200. Serving most of Rhode Island and southeastern Mass. We got a long way to go with winter. Make sure that tank is filled. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Henry Oil, a local, family-run business since 1947 that you can depend on. For all your oil needs, call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Huge developments in the Karen Reed case. Someone that's been covering it, I think is interesting, Grant Smith Ellis. And he gave a breakdown on what he thinks the latest now regarding Karen Reed and the blogger Turtle Boy, Aidan Kearney. I want to play some of this. Here it is.
Do you
right
think
here.
That they have enough?
Well, before I get to that question, I just want to back up and quickly take on this preemptive weaponization of the Overton window that we see being deployed by not only the Karen Reed PR team, but also some of the moronic mob of minions. Not everyone of right. this Free Karen Reed supporters falls in that group. But for the people engaging in that, I think they may not be doing it intentionally, but Kate, I'm sure you've picked up on this. It's not a good faith effort to engage in discourse. It's an attempt to get ahead of the range of acceptable discourse about a topic in the public sphere. And it's an attempt to force you to respond because that defines the parameters of the Overton window. The problem is it's this very degraded form of it, and you're rightfully calling it out because they're undermining what is a very substantial and consequential overlapping nexus between a corrupted federal probe that went nowhere and a alleged murderer who they've been tricked into defending. Now, getting back to your question about what do I think is going to happen going forward, I think it's a 9-part analysis. I laid it out on Twitter earlier. If you want to read it, you can see it. But basically, thus, I think the most likely outcome is Karen Reed takes a plea to manslaughter for the death of Officer John O'Keefe, who, of course, his memory is center to all of this because justice, whether it comes to the people who intimidated witnesses or comes from Ms. Reed, is centered around everything that flowed from Officer O'Keefe being murdered. So I think my opinion is Reed takes a plea to manslaughter. Reed, as part of that plea, has to allocute publicly and say in front of open court something like, this is what happened and how it happened and how I did it. She probably also has to allocute to some other stuff that may not happen right away, because I think Reed will, in my opinion, also become a state's witness in the trial of Turtle Boy. I don't think Turtle Boy will get the opportunity to plea. I think he'll be kept in jail for a few more months. He's not getting out anytime soon. And then I think he'll face a criminal trial on, right now it's 18 plus felony counts. I think we'll see it get expanded, to answer your question, based on the ongoing grand jury, which was, of course, confirmed during the restraining order hearing and by both Kearney and the victim in that case, the ongoing grand jury. If the indictments come up from that and Kearney's facing 25, 30, 40, whatever it is, indictments, and Reed's already turned state's witness and it's just him, the length of jail time he could be facing is exponential. But Reed then would, in my opinion, enter into something called the Continuing Cooperation Agreement, where her ability to avoid serious punishment for her plea in the O'Keefe case will be tied to her ability to furnish information that results in the successful prosecution of Kearney. This is a very common thing. It's called the Continuing Cooperation Agreement. Then, as a result of those things happening, I think we will see other people brought into the state grand jury, and way more than the Canton 9 and some of these, that 10th person who faced a criminal charge. I think we will see far more criminal charges related to the apparatus surrounding Turtle Boy and Reed and the PR network here. And I think what will happen is those people may get plea deals or whatnot, but they're coming into that criminal case. And the reality is, and I've said this time and time and time again, the media attention is going to go away. The public focus is going to go away. What's going to stick is the people who catch charges and the criminal process that flows from that. Whether you take a plea deal or not, it is not going to be a pleasant road. And I think it is some wonderful... sorry, my voice is running out. I think it's some wonderful...
Let me just leave it at that. Folks, this... I don't know. This thing became a runaway train, excuse me, I believe. And... the two of them are in seemingly an awful lot of trouble about these search warrants and what's coming out on Karen Reed's phone, because Ted Daniel of Boston 25, he also had a good piece, because it, again, I know everything needs context, but it certainly would come off as though she was encouraging Turtle Boy to harass the witnesses in the case, and then providing him with various information and addresses and things like that, even having the go-ahead of what he was publishing. I mean, there was a time that I've even said I thought that maybe her attorneys were the ones that were helping him. But now it sounds like it was
Boston police officer boyfriend.
It was actually Karen Reed. Now listen to this.
The state police used to seize two phones from Karen Reed. Our investigative reporter Ted Daniel first broke this story on Twitter this afternoon. And Ted, it is possible that Reed could face some new charges.
Vanessa, according to the warrant, yes, this is part of the witness intimidation investigation separate from her murder case. State police claim Karen Reed has been working with Aiden Carney, the blogger known as Turtle Boy, to prevent her murder case from going to trial. Carney was indicted on witness intimidation charges in December. State police put Aiden Carney behind bars before his trial, and now it appears they want Karen Reed next. This search warrant claims Reed has indirectly intimidated and harassed people identified as witnesses in her murder case. It says Reed and Carney exchanged 189 phone calls and communicated on Signal, an encrypted messaging service. State police allege Reed took steps to provide Carney non-public information while appearing to be distant and controlling what he can publish publicly.
This is the home of Brian Albert.
Carney runs the blog TV Daily News. He says Reed's been framed and has been aggressively advocating on her behalf. A college friend of Karen Reed's connected Carney to Reed last spring when he first began covering her case. That college friend has since fallen out with Reed and is now working with state police. The warrant alleges Reed directly and indirectly gave Carney photography, material relative to her criminal defense, and editorial oversight of blog posts and videos intended to harass. And according to the warrant, Reed's college friend tipped Carney off to a federal probe looking at local and state law enforcement's handling of her murder case. In April, she texted him, "Not public. The feds have been involved longer than anyone is likely guessing." Statements from Carney's former girlfriend are also included in the warrant. She told state police Karen Reed was interviewed by federal law enforcement, and she claims Carney told her Reed's attorneys were working with the U.S. Attorney's Office.
So a lot to digest there. Reed's lawyers declined to comment on the warrant. However, her attorney, David Unetti, did tell me he's waiting to learn what the federal investigation has uncovered. Reed's defense and the Norfolk DA's office have formally requested any information the feds may have that it could impact her upcoming trial. For 25 Investigates, I'm Ted Daniel.
You know, very, very... Great reporting by Ted Daniel. It sounds to me like the whole Karen Reed defense is imploding. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Propane Plus. Call them today. Heating and cooling in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359 for Propane Plus. Three generations you can always depend on Propane Plus for all your heating and cooling. Call them today, 401-885-4209. Three generations, they're available 24/7 for service and delivery, and they're going to serve you for a very long time. They have a great user-friendly website. You just log on at propaneplus.com, and then you type in your zip code, residential, commercial, Propane Plus, heating and cooling, always there for you. Give them a call today. In Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359. The Johnson family, three generations, heating and cooling. You can always depend on Propane Plus. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. So Governor McKee is now saying He's very upset. He should have been notified sooner about the bridge issue. He wants to have a meeting with himself, the person in charge. Let's pick up the story, NBC 10. McKee says it shouldn't have taken 72 hours to notify him of the Washington Bridge issue, again, in his own administration that he has set up. Here we go.
With that bridge. Good evening, I'm Patrice Wood.
I'm Gene Valicenti. The governor's suggesting engineers suspecting trouble the week before the closure should have clued him in right away. That's according to NBC 10's Gabrielle Caracciolo, who caught up with the governor before moving over to East Providence tonight. Gabrielle.
Rideout director Peter Alviti says the standard practice was followed after those broken rods were discovered here on the westbound side of the Washington Bridge. But Governor Dan McKee today disagrees.
So as soon as anybody knew, we should have known.
But this standard practice.
A stark contrast between Governor Dan McKee's take on when he was notified about the issues with the Washington Bridge and that of Rideout director Peter Alviti. Both didn't find out about these broken rods until 3 days after they were discovered by engineers.
They came to me at midday on December 11th and with a recommendation that the bridge should be closed. Now, these are a group of highly professional, highly educated structural engineering experts who presented me with information that was very evident that we should, for safety reasons, close the bridge.
Alviti says he told the governor within minutes of learning about the issue. McKee says he was first texted at 2:52, just over 2 hours before the state would start shutting down the westbound bridge. But do you think in a situation like that, when there is such a, you know, the email said there was a critical finding, possible critical failure, that at least the head of the department should have found out sooner?
Well, again, I can't speak to that, but I can speak to the fact that as soon as somebody knew, I should have known. From that point on December 11th, I think it's been handled well.
McKee says it was ultimately his decision to close the bridge. Providence Mayor Brett Smiley says he was notified about an hour before the closure. Everyone now waiting for notification about the next steps.
What I'm focused on is waiting somewhat impatiently to know what the plan is, how long it's going to take, so that we can start making arrangements or accommodations or changes that we might need to make this a little bit easier.
Smiley says if this closure is going to potentially last years, he's going to think about alternatives and modifications to city streets, intersections, and lights. He says he's anxious to know the game plan so he can start making things easier for people once they get across the bridge and into the city of Providence. Live in East Providence, Gabrielle Caracciolo, NBC 10 News.
You know, that's amazing. That's the first I've heard that Governor McKee is now saying it was his decision to close the bridge. Because prior to this, he was basically saying that he was notified it was going to be closed. Now, we did learn he sent what makes no sense about that statement. And I want to come back to this. What makes no sense about that statement from Governor McKee, that it was his decision to close it, was the fact then why didn't he go on television and announce it at 5 o'clock? He sent out the head of the DOT. This is different than what he has said. We do know that night at 5:20, apparently he left the state house and went to Hope High School to observe their basketball practice. Now, I don't know what that was all about. It doesn't sound like something pressing. I would tend to think that the players could have still, I know he likes to be this whole Coach McKee thing, but if he was the one making the decision, it was his decision to close the bridge, then why didn't he feel the need to go on the public airwaves and announce to everyone that he was doing? And he didn't do that. That's when he sent Director Alviti out to do that. So it sounds to me that they still, 8 weeks later, they don't have their story straight. Everyone's still trying to cover themselves. I thought Mayor Smiley saying, I'm waiting rather impatiently. How many, and it was Mayor Smiley that said, how many years is this going to take? That's very telling. So we're off the first, you know, I mean, when you look now, they were saying this will be straightened out in 3 months. In the first week, Governor McKee was doing a victory lap where he was celebrating, saying that it's only going to be 3 months and we reopened the two lanes, and that's what everyone, according to him, is excited about. And we've learned that clearly that is no longer, and I question it if it was ever the case, as a matter of fact. So, but this notion, that's how it strikes me. After all this time, he still doesn't have his act together. And let's go back to, this was Governor McKee the day after the closure with Brian Crandall, asking a question a lot of people have been wondering.
Lives were potentially saved. There's still a lot of frustration. Has there been any discussion of changes at DOT, potential resignation of the director?
Yeah, so I'm not going to answer those questions. We're here to talk about an emergency. That's out of line. Okay, so we're here, and you may be talking about it, but the people I'm talking to are very pleased with what's happening right now. And anybody behind me right now that we're going to personalize this issue at this moment in time during an emergency, I think that is a beyond the pale. So we'll answer questions specific to this topic going forward. I don't want to hear any more of those questions. You can take it out on me later, Brian. But there's an inappropriate question, and I'm not going to even entertain an answer on that. I have already indicated that I have full faith in the team that's sitting here and standing here with me and beyond me, and that includes the leadership at DOT.
Do you acknowledge that people are frustrated?
I'm not going to go further on that.
No, do you acknowledge
that? I'm going to ask you to stay on topic. What the people, I think the Mayor Smiley hit the nail on the head. We're here to service the people that live in the state of Rhode Island, and we have recognized that they have been, certainly more than merely inconvenience, and East Providence and Providence in particular. We'll stick to the topic at hand, and the topic at hand is reopening the bridge. You got some tremendous news because of the work that is happening by DOT and the contractors on the site. That we're going to be open on travel both east and west this weekend. That's worth really acknowledging the leadership that is happening in DOT and beyond. I'll go back to Andrea. Andrea can comment.
Isn't that amazing? Leadership. Is there anyone that has watched this situation and would consider what you've seen leadership? I would argue it's the farthest thing from leadership. You couldn't be far from the truth. Leadership, because they went to the eastbound side and opened up and changed that direction. And he calls that leadership. That's not leadership. No, this is a problem. They're still scrambling. This is another disastrous week for them. They can try to frame it any way they want. And remember, we're just now, this is February. So we are still weeks away from them having any clue what they're going to do. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Do you need a good plumber? I found the best plumber, JMB Plumbing. Call them today. All your plumbing needs, 401-743-9153. JMB Plumbing. They've been providing plumbing services for years. Skilled professionals stand behind their work. Guarantee you will be happy. Maybe it's repairing damaged water pipes, repair clogged pipelines, maybe replace a water heater, as well as all your plumbing needs. Call them now. It's JMB Plumbing, 401-743-9153. Nothing throws off your life or your home or your business. When you need plumbing service, you need someone reliable, someone who's professional, someone who'll handle the job and do it right. It's JMB Plumbing. Call them today, 401-743-9153, JMB Plumbing, and look for them on Facebook. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Let's pick up U.S. Attorney in Massachusetts. This is the Q&A, the announce the rest of the state troopers. I always like when then they get some specific questions from members of the media, and let's listen in.
On the first question, we've identified over 24 people who did not pass the test or did not take the test who received a commercial driver's license. Those names have been referred to the Registry of Motor Vehicles. On the second piece, yes, it's alleged it's quid pro quo. We're not alleging cash, but we are alleging various items. Some of these are in the picture here. The driveway, the snowblower, mailbox, landscape, and that type of thing.
Is there any evidence that any of those two dozen drivers roughly were
getting
drone away? Like any
incidents
that you
know? So we don't have any information on that, but we also haven't been following people with drones out on the road. So I really, that's beyond the scope of what we investigated.
Can you tell us what the origin of this was? Did you have a whistleblower?
I can't comment on the origins of an investigation like this. We get information from a variety of sources.
Flint. It seemed that what they were getting was rather small potatoes for everything that they put on the line and the news.
Seems like a comment, not a question. I really can't speak to the motivation of the individuals involved. We're saying this started in the summer of 2018, and you know, our investigation obviously didn't start when we alleged the conspiracy started. We've been investigating this for a much shorter period of time, but it has been going on, as alleged in the indictment, for over 5 years.
But how should people feel safe out there when you're saying that there's been texting going on, talking about drivers who are idiots who shouldn't be getting licenses, and there's truckers out on the roads, and you think it's just two dozen? There's not more?
The two dozen number I gave you refers to what we've uncovered in this investigation that of people who have a CDL that didn't pass the test. It's not part of what we do in a criminal investigation to audit all the CDL drivers. That's why we've been working with the Registered Motor Vehicles to address the public safety issue of people who have CDLs, may have got them improperly. Flint. I mean, I'll let Chris speak to the DOT perspective. The reason why we've been working with RMV is they're the ones who issue the licenses, and they're the ones in the best position to take the next steps. Flint, you've had your hand up a few times.
Obviously, I haven't had time to read the entire document, but there are two people who are unidentified, friend conspirator and trooper conspirator. Why are these people not identified? Is it because they haven't been arrested? Are they going to be charged, or are they special and so on?
I would say this investigation is ongoing, and we're going to follow additional leads that we're working on that may come in. And I can't get into the reasons why certain people have been moved out of the defendant category and described the way they are. We do that for a variety of reasons.
Now, again, folks, this is the U.S. attorney, and it's so disturbing. I want to go back just to the very beginning where he lays out all the charges on this whole thing.
Large vehicles need to secure in order to operate those vehicles safely. The indictment alleges these defendants gave passing scores to people who did not pass the test to obtain a CDL. In return for passing unqualified applicants, one of the defendants, Sergeant Gary Cedarquist, is alleged to have received personal benefits of a variety of nature. A new driveway valued at over $10,000, a $2,000 snowblower, and other such items. The grand jury indictment against these six men includes charges of extortion, honest services mail fraud, conspiracy, false statements, and falsification of records. In short, as alleged in this indictment, the CDLs were for sale, and troopers were bribed with free goods to pass applicants, no matter how they performed on the test. Four of these defendants were arrested this morning, including two members of the Massachusetts State Police, Sergeant Gary Cedarquist and Trooper Joel Rogers. Two civilians were also arrested this morning, Scott Camara and Eric Matheson. Two retired Massachusetts State Troopers were arrested in Florida yesterday, Calvin Butner and Perry Menendez. So let me just provide a little bit more background about these criminal charges. The issuance of CDLs is governed by federal law and regulations. These laws require that in order to secure a CDL, an operator must pass certain tests, three tests specifically, a vehicle inspection, a basic skills test, and a road test. You need to pass these tests in order to operate large vehicles on highways and in our neighborhoods, things like tractor trailers, oil tankers, and school buses. These standards and regulations exist for one very simple reason: to protect and prevent death and injuries from the operation of commercial motor vehicles. It's to make sure that everyone operating these types of rigs at high rates of speed on highways or in neighborhoods has the required skill to operate them safely. And under federal law, these CDL tests are administered at the state level. And here in Massachusetts, that responsibility is vested with the state police in a particular unit known as the Commercial Driver's Licensing Unit. The indictment alleges that starting in August 2018, three of the Massachusetts State Police officers working in that unit used their positions to falsify results on the basic skills tests for certain CDL applicants. The indictment alleged that a fourth trooper, Trooper Joel Rogers, joined that conspiracy in 2022. The civilians who were charged either provided free goods or conspired with the troopers to pass applicants who didn't actually pass the test. These defendants all conspired to pass applicants who either failed the test, did not take the test, or took an abbreviated test.
Wow.
As set forth in the indictment, the defendants allegedly displayed no regard for the public safety consequences of allowing people who didn't pass the test to have a CDL and operate commercial trucks. As you will see in the indictment, there are various text messages included. They jokingly talk about golden treatments and golden handshakes, referring to giving guaranteed passes to certain CDL applicants, regardless of how they did on the test. In one text, Defendant Butner, a Massachusetts state trooper, allegedly talks about an applicant who was performing required maneuvers, and he described him as, quote, a mess, end quote. And he said that the applicant owes Defendant Cedarquist, quote, prime rib for passing the test. In another...
Folks, so, so disturbing. Again, U.S. Attorney swooping in on troopers within the Massachusetts State Police. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvement, call them today for a free quote. You can also find them on Facebook, 401-323-9252. 323-9252, AJ, drywall, plasters, home improvement, frame to finish basements. What a difference it'll make in your basement. Acoustic ceilings. Look how beautiful your ceiling could be. New homes, additions. Also, commercial rehabs, painting, remodeling. Contact them today. It's a family-run business. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvements. Call for a free quote. What a difference they'll make in your home, your ceilings, floors, basements. 401-323-9252. What a difference. Beautiful walls and ceilings. 401-323-9252. You can also find them on Facebook. It's AJ Drywall, Plaster, and Home Improvements for your home or business. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Controversy. Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey, as she announced she's converting Roxbury Recreation Center, new shelter for illegals. And I don't blame the people for being upset about it. Let's listen.
Because I'm committed to this. Little kids need to be able to breathe clean air. They need to be able to access swimming pools. They need to have lifeguards there who are going to teach them how to swim. And they need to have activities. I don't know what we're going to do for a couple, 3 months. I'll call universities. I'll call other places.
The governor went on to say she is also looking at other locations, but has not said exactly where.
No, she sent them to Roxbury. Make no mistake about it. She sent them to Roxbury. As other people are saying, that, you know, she didn't send them to Wellesley or anything like that. Let's listen to the
Malnea Cass Rec Center.
The full piece. Here it is.
Inside the new temporary shelter, which will be a safe space for hundreds of families over the next few months. The Malnea Cass Rec Center.
A recreational center in Roxbury, now a temporary safety net site with beds, play areas, and other necessities for incoming migrant families that the governor and community leaders toured today.
We're here today because we really don't have a choice.
State and city leaders say they've all been moved by the plight of families, many now camping out at Logan Airport with no place to go, and a state shelter system stretched to the limit.
When children are asking, Mommy, where are we going tonight? Where are we going to sleep? It's a human crisis.
Shame on Healy!
But the plan has received mixed reviews in the community, since the recreation center is also a vital resource for youth and adult programs.
We sympathize with them. We as a people in our community, we love. But sometimes we love so much that we spite our own selves.
Alternating toe touches.
Tony DeRocca, with Boston United Track and Cross Country, coaches young athletes in a free weekly program here, and now doesn't know where they'll go with a meet set for Sunday.
We have kids who also are impacted negatively, and our program is one that very few stable times of their life.
I've been going here for like 2 years now, and like it's been like a second home to me.
But the decision to make it a temporary home until May 31st for migrant families is called humanitarian, but also difficult by some. And Boston Mayor Michelle Wu acknowledged that today.
This is not the first time that this community has been asked to sacrifice over and over again. And so we'll continue to work with the state and ensure that all options are on the table.
Now, the governor says she hopes the community will be helped, not burdened by the plan, saying local vendors will be used to provide food and other necessities here, and funding will be provided for long-awaited upgrades to the Melnia Cass Recreational Center once the temporary shelter is closed.
You know, think about this. They're now, and it's been happening, but knocking out regular citizens to put them there. How is that fair? And she can cry all she wants. That is absolutely ridiculous. Hey, and by the way, folks, you watch. This is going to spread. Governor McKee, he is absolutely daring them to start to put some, to bring illegal. I mean, he's not, you know, not showing up on a bus, definitely arriving here. But can you get any closer than Roxbury to Providence? That's a short ride, under an hour. But this is on Democrat policies. This is absolutely about with what's going on at the border and then allowing it to then go into other cities, whether it's New York or Chicago or in this case in the Boston area. So, and you continue, if you run a sanctuary state, then you're open to it. You run a sanctuary city, then you're vulnerable to it. But this begins and ends with the policies at the border. And as long as you have governors like Governor Healy and Governor McKee and Governor Newsom and the mayor of New York City and the governor of Illinois, then, you know, why should it just be a problem for Texas? Why should it just be a problem for Arizona? Other states are stepping up. So, but to be knocking out American citizens for these people who have no business being here, totally wrong. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Follow On The Scene live stream. That's our Facebook live stream page. You can go to the website, DePietro.com. There's a link there. Or on Facebook, just find The John DePietro Show. That's where we do the on-the-scene live stream. Follow all the action. Make sure you follow our Facebook page.